It's really funny. Someone said to me the other day, "Do you think you're less angry than you used to be?" Which made me think, "Oh, so you thought I was fucking angry when
Right.
I've mellowed." I think the thing that still makes me the most angry is, you know, to be cliche, is the patriarchy. The fact that women are just not allowed to be women, that we are second-class citizens, that we're not even in the Constitution, that we are still, that it's still baked into us that we are less than, and I'm exhausted by it.
Welcome to Women Are Mad, where we invite women to bring their anger into everyday conversation. We're all feeling it. Let's get together to work out what to do with it. I'm Salima Saxton. I'm an actress and writer.
I'm Jennifer Cox, and I'm a psychotherapist. We notice that anger is the one emotion that women aren't allowed to openly express. Meanwhile, everything around us is making us absolutely furious.
By talking about women's anger freely, we hope we'll inspire you to do the same.
Salima, what's made you mad this week?
Well, our producer just used a really good phrase, and I'm going to nick it from Jenny now.
Go on. But
the everything of everything.
Say more.
Just sometimes I find it hard to keep all of it going, as in, I currently am showing you the fact that I'm wearing a pajama top under my pretty top.
I see your fact.
I see it. Just sometimes, you know, doing all the stuff that one is meant to do as a functioning grown up. First of all, the stuff that makes you socially acceptable, as in cleaning your teeth, putting on deodorant, just doing all of the regular societal stuff.
Yeah.
Sometimes just that. Sorting out all the paraphernalia of being an adult plus a parent actually as well.
Yeah.
And then having to get on with my day in a relatively good spirited, sane kind of way. Sometimes the everything of everything I find a little bit too much.
I'm stuck in my head as you were speaking on putting on deodorant, because I feel like some days that's quite exhausting, isn't it? Remembering to do it, lifting your hand up to do it.
Yeah, and all the hormones for me. I'm spreading on various hormones, letting them dry.
There's a lot to do, isn't there? There's a lot to do.
But I think also it's
an age.
I think it's also being in, you know, then being in relatively good spirits, you know, having to, well, then work, then make the phone calls, then do everything, make the small talk in between the phone calls and the man coming to do the drains, offer cups of tea to people because that's the appropriate thing to do, thank people profusely, make conversations at the school gates. Sometimes I'm
heaven.
A real Grinch. Yeah, you know, I really feel that I am quite a brilliant Grinch, really. That's who I am in many ways. And I find it just difficult sometimes to keep up with the small talk of life. I'm not always interested, and I'm probably really dull myself in those moments, but I'm not always that interested in exchanging information about, I don't know, houses and pets and children.
Well, don't you think it's because it's just more overwhelm? It's more people in your mind, it's more stuff in your mind. Basically, everyone's just doing a kind of dump on each other, like offload, offload, offload.
And then for me, all I then want to do is get under my heated blanket, watch Real Housewives, eat something sugary, and then kind of shove my Invisalign in after I've cleaned my teeth.
I mean, that's effort.
That's all I kind of want.
That's making me feel tired. I'm going to introduce our guest today. She is a producer, screenwriter, and author known for hits like ABC show Baby Daddy and The Hollywood Show. She's a pro-aging storyteller who speaks her mind, and we always want to listen. Please welcome the inspirational Heidi Clements.
I'm going to kick it off and ask you straight away, Heidi, what makes you angry?
Gosh, you know, it's really funny. Someone said to me the other day, do you think you're less angry than you used to be? Which made me think, oh, so you thought I was fucking angry.
Right.
Ah. I was. I've mellowed. I think the thing that still makes me the most angry is, you know, to be cliche, is the patriarchy, you know, is just the facts that women are just not allowed to be women, that we are second class citizens, that we're not even in the Constitution, that we are still, that it's still baked into us that we are less than. And I'm exhausted by it. I mean, I talk about it a lot while I'm getting dressed, but it really is, it continues to make me angry, because as a 63-year-old, when I was younger, you weren't allowed to speak out. And so I was constantly, you know, chastised for being too loud.
So who by family, by school?
Everyone. I mean, everyone, everywhere. I think every report card probably said talks too much, because, you know, when you're a woman who doesn't want to go with the flow, you are labeled loud and obnoxious,
difficult.
And
too much?
Difficult, crazy, too much. And I just always knew that I didn't want to take a back seat to any boy, that's for sure, but to anybody, you know, I was just as worthy as everybody else. I don't know why I knew that or how I knew that. I think actually my crazy strict British parents really raised us to think that we were equals with men. I didn't really realize that I wasn't an equal to a man until America told me I was.
Do you feel like there's a difference then? There's a large difference between Britain and America in that respect?
I think maybe there is, because like I said, my parents, I mean, you know, they definitely believed that I was supposed to get married and have children. And I definitely felt the pressure of that from them and from other people often. I still do. You know, people still tell you that you'll never know real love unless you have a child, which is just bonkers. But I think it could have been, you know, my Jewish background too. I think Jewish people raise their kids to be, not that other people don't, but I think in particular Jews raise kids to believe that they are worthy and to take their place in the world. And because of what happened, you know, not very much earlier than when I was born. It was only 50 years earlier that the Holocaust happened. So I think it was a combination of being British and Jewish. My mother worked, you know, there was never, she wasn't a homemaker. She wasn't a trad wife, as we call them here, which is bizarre that that's reemerging.
Trad wife is a thing now, isn't it?
Yes. So what, what is that? Is it, it seems like it's
going to be. It means traditional wife. It means traditional wife. So traditional means the patriarchy means listen, if that's what you want to do, great. But it means, you know, being a homemaker and raising a family. And more importantly, the thing that gets me is the sort of like taking care of your husband.
Yeah, it feels like it's a real, it's sort of fetishized, this whole movement,
I think,
isn't
so.
It?
I mean, I know people as a get hashtag upset. Even, right? I think people will get upset with me for saying that, because, you know, what's wrong with having a traditional family? Nothing. Nothing's wrong with it. Nothing's wrong with any way you want to live your life. It's your life to live. And that's kind of the point of all of it. I just, it bums me out, because I just think women are so special, and I think we're so much more than just moms and homemakers. Yes. And it would be nice if you could do all of the things, you know?
Well, I mean, Heidi, Jen and I were talking about this earlier. That's the thing that grounds me, that brings me back to Salimaness. So I need to take less care of my children and partner in order to carve out that Salima time. And I think that's vital.
Yeah.
I think it's vital for my own sanity.
I don't think people give moms, mothers, wives enough credit for the fact that they literally give their lives up for their children. I was just too selfish to have kids, because I wanted to live my life for me. I didn't realize it, but
the fact that it's even called selfish when you decide to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just a decision that you made for yourself.
Yeah.
Heidi, was that a decision that you made consciously or it just happened that way?
I think it just happened. I wasn't ready to have kids until I was 40 because I was very busy being an alcoholic, as I like to say. And I got sober right before my 40th birthday. And that's when I was like, oh, well, I guess maybe I should have some kids. And I went to a gynecologist. I had a friend who was going to be a sperm donor. And when she told me what it was going to entail, I just said, oh, fuck no. I can't. I don't want to do it. And and I really have had no regrets about that. I talk a lot about the fact that I was completely unnurtured as a child. And I think while my sisters went and sort of broke that cycle and had kids and are wonderful mothers, I just was like, no, no thank you.
When you say unnurtured, what do you mean?
You know, British, in the 60s, you know, by a mother who had kids at 19, she did her best, but no one ever said, I love you. There were not a lot of hugs. It was not about, you know, nurturing my spirit. I wanted to be an actress and a writer. And that was just like, what are you, ridiculous? You can't, nobody does that. And just, you know, I mean, I had to teach my parents how to say I love you. And it took me 10 years.
This does feel very British.
You know, it's not a, it's just the way the British are.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, Heidi, even so, my mom's Pakistani. She's in her 80s. And because she was brought up in the shadow of British colonialism, my mom is more British than the British. So my mother doesn't agree with too many outward displays of emotion.
She shows the Brits how to be British.
It's incredibly, you know, to show your insides is kind of gross and almost greedy, I think.
Yeah.
But I'm sure that's why I became an actress, became a writer, because I wanted to do exactly that.
Take up your space.
It's so strange. Yeah. It's really strange. And it really, it really made me who I am. And it guided so much of my life and was so much of my anger from never being heard and never being listened to. You know, if you hurt yourself in my house, my mom would say, oh, do you want to go to the hospital? Well, yeah, I'm four. I don't know. Maybe I do want to go to the hospital, you know? So I think that really shaped me and made me a people pleaser and made me an alcoholic. And I feel badly because I do blame a lot on my mom, but you know. Sorry, mom, but you know, it was rough.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it wasn't like rough compared to like what people are going through in Gaza right now, but it was rough. It was a hard way to grow up. And I do think it led to me being an alcoholic. And I do think it led to me being years of people pleasing. And I also think it finally led me to be such an empath, which I enjoy, which is difficult, but I enjoy. And it's funny because I think, you know, the messages that I try to put out now are so nice and kind. And I think people who have known me for many years are like, who the fuck is that bitch talking? I know Heidi.
So the former Heidi, what would she have been? What would she have been saying if she'd been on Instagram?
Shit talking, fucking everything sucks. Fuck you. Why aren't you on my side? Why aren't you like me kind of a person? Just like,
and who was this Heidi?
Angry.
Is it this Heidi? Was this the Heidi of your 20s, your 30s?
Like 20s, 30s, until I got sober.
Okay.
I think when I was young, I was very sweet. But I think the minute I started drinking in my 20s, just unleashed all of my anger and all of my inner demons and inner thoughts. And I just wanted everyone to fucking listen to me. Listen to me. I have something to say. And I never knew why. And
but in terms
no one ever listened to me.
But then, okay, so the alcoholism, we can safely say that was an unhealthy solution to the problem of not being heard, feeling as if everything had been stuck inside for so long. But if you look at the achievements of your life, surely there's also something in there that we can kind of trace back to this the energy of those years, the dynamism.
I was molested as a kid, so I think that's where it all starts.
Okay.
So you want to, if you want to know what makes people who they are, just go back to their childhood trauma.
Yeah.
I don't know who it was. I think it happened once, but I know that it happened.
Yeah. How old were you?
4.
Oh.
I know that that also has shaped all of the things, the alcoholism.
Yes.
It
has.
Promiscuity, very young. So yeah, I think that's where the real anger starts, when your brain starts to remember, you know. And I buried it so deeply for years. I was also assaulted in my 30s when I was blackout drunk in Los Angeles. And I also buried that one. And then I went and did ayahuasca and remembered both of those things.
Did you ever talk to your parents about what had happened when you were a child?
Well, I don't think I talked to my mom about it when I was a child, but I know that I talked to her about it later in life, because when I came back from doing ayahuasca, I called my mom and I said, I'm going to ask you this again. I had asked her before, like for the last time, did something happen to me as a child? And she said, well, you did tell me that your uncle did something to you, but I told you that was stupid. And I literally burst into tears and had this visceral reaction that made me realize, you know, oh, okay, it did happen. And part of the problem is that, you know, you blame yourself because you can't remember what actually happened. Did it actually happen? Did I make it up? And the only reason why I know it happened, and this is weird, is because, well, I've had flashbacks about it and there's weird things tied to it. But my psychic actually said to me, I just want you to know that what you think happened to you as a child happened. It was once. And I also want you to know that I know that you were raped when you were blackout drunk in your apartment in Los Angeles. And I hadn't told a soul.
Wow.
And so that's kind of, it's weird that you trust your psychic, but she's kind of more than a psychic. But anyway, so yeah, I think, you know, those things, I think your childhood sets you up for how you're going to be the rest of your life. And you don't remember I didn't remember any of that. So I didn't know that I had to go back and fix that in order to live a better life. I just buried myself in booze and what I thought was happiness and fun.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's only been, and then, you know, once I got sober, I probably spent 10 years just like figuring out who the fuck I was. And it really hasn't been until I turned 60 that I have a grip on like who I am, why I'm here, what my purpose is. And it's sad because it's really the best time of my life. And I wish I had this knowledge when I was younger. Probably could have used some therapy.
What was the turning point, Heidi, that made you get sober?
It's funny. There should have been about 20 other things that made me get sober. But I woke up one morning on like a Monday. No, it was a Thursday morning. And I decided to drink before work. And I was a single person who was responsible for my salary and my apartment and my life. Nobody was giving me any money. And I realized like, oh shit, this could be it for me. If I'm too drunk to go to work, I'm now jeopardizing my career. And I got on the phone and I called every single person that I knew, my parents, my sisters, my friends, and I said, I am an alcoholic and I need to quit drinking. And then I got shit-faced the whole rest of the weekend. And then I quit that Monday morning and I white-knuckled it. I never looked back and I it's been 23 years.
Oh, congratulations. I'm saying congratulations with that. Is that appropriate language? I don't even know if that's appropriate. Am I allowed to say that? I do think congratulations.
It's not easy. You know, I say that you live the rest of your life like an open wound dancing on the head of a pin.
Right.
But it's I don't think people understand what poison alcohol is and how the problem isn't necessarily, you know, when you're drinking. It's when you're not drinking that you're, again, super angry that you're not, that you can't disappear from the thoughts inside of your own brain.
It's the oblivion, isn't it? That's what you most desire.
I mean, I'm an addict. I will find any way possible to shut the voices off inside my head.
Has that transferred to other things post-alcohol? Or do you?
Yeah, I had to stop smoking pot again. I started smoking pot about 17 years after I got sober, and it was fine at first. But then eventually I realized, like, oh, I can shut the voices off with this.
Right. So it's
and
a substitute.
Super functioning because I'm not doing anything that I wouldn't do sober. But, you know, an addict is an addict, and so I abuse it. And so I've been clean now from that since December 26th. I think I'm probably going to stay off of it.
And with this in mind, if we think about anger again, what's your relationship to anger now? You say it's changed. Can we think about kind of specific instances? So, for example, in this current space in your life, when did you last get angry with somebody? What does it look like?
Oh my God. Just the other day, I got mad at somebody I was having lunch with because I bring out in some people, usually women my age, I bring out a sort of, if I say white, they're going to say black. If I say gray, they're going to say white. This sort of
contrariness.
I want to argue with you, you know?
So why? Do you stand for something that they would like to be, perhaps?
I think so.
So something they envy.
Yeah, that's why.
They hate my confidence. And they hate my freedom and they
visibility.
I wish I could ask them, like, in the moment, like, you know, this person was literally telling me, would ask me a question. I would tell them my truth. And then they would tell me that was dumb and that's not possible. Like, why would, that's not even possible. And it was so fucking infuriating.
Yeah.
But I couldn't say anything because it was a friend of a friend. And I don't know what it is, but I do know that I bring out the worst in some women my age, which is difficult because a lot of times I have to pitch television programs to them.
That's tough.
There's something about maybe my confidence, whatever it is, it's hilarious because I'm like, you know, sitting over here with imposter syndrome, like I am far from perfect. And it's so funny that I bring out in people something I don't even feel.
Right. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that crazy? And yet that's kind of all over the show with people.
But also envy, you know, and again, like I'm assuming this, but that was the first thought that came to me when you said that about other women your age. You know, envy is such a poisonous kind of paralyzing emotion, isn't it? I want what you have rather than going, oh wow, tell me more, I love what you have.
Yeah, it's so destructive.
Tell me more so that you can find out I don't maybe even want what I have,
right? And you don't think
I might
have
want
it
what you have.
Yeah, right.
We should be on the same side.
Wouldn't that be such a more interesting conversation to have?
Yeah, it would be. It's very frustrating. I mean, a lot of my friends are in their 30s because I am not a threat to them.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
I'm not going to date their boyfriends. I'm not. And I don't know, like, whatever you're thinking about me, I don't feel that way.
Right.
So you should not feel that way because then we could be friends. And we could talk
about
that.
But also, Heidi, Jen and I often say it's so important who you surround yourself with, right?
Yeah.
It's vital. I mean, I used to kind of like, you know, read the Hallmark card about it and go, yeah, yeah, great. Have your good friends. I think it is vital for your very soul to have the women around you who have your back.
Agreed. And I feel like ever since I did ayahuasca, it awakened in me a way to literally check people's energies the second they walk in the door. And if I don't feel it, I'm out. I don't need to give you another chance. I'm not going to.
I'm with you on that.
Time. I'm too old.
Life's too short.
Bad way. Life is too short. Mm-hmm. I don't. If you're not going to bring good energy, then we're not going to. We're never going to be friends.
And also, Heidi, I really trust my instinct these days. You know, if I kind of feel something from you, and I feel uneasy, I backtrack now very, very quickly, because I used to kind of try and win people over. I kind of think, oh,
well, because we're told that, you know, it's us. Oh, you're being silly. It's
that's the programming.
Men, I don't think men do that as much. Men are just like, yeah, whatever. Let's, you know.
Or they're just like, no, I don't. I'm not going to spend time with you. That's that. It's so much more simple.
They just don't. Yeah. And so I think women are such, you know, empaths and people pleasers and all of these things that, you know, you feel badly when you walk in and you just instantly hate somebody. But I go with it now, and I just back the fuck away.
I was going to ask you this in respect of the anger idea. Then, are there instances where you actually find it difficult to show people that you are angry with them or you don't like them?
Good for you. I love this. I love this.
Unfortunately, my face shows everything and I can be a real fucking bitch, especially if you come at me. I just will not hold back. And then I feel really badly about it afterwards and usually say, like, I'm sorry, but you brought, you know, this out in me. Or I try to talk about it now, but
do you find it possible to have that conversation? How do they respond to you trying to have the conversation?
If it's somebody that I want to stay friends with, then it's worth it to me to have the conversation with them. And I had a great example with my friend Jess recently, and I was telling a story that was important to me that was not a funny story, but her way to deal with conversations that aren't easy is to make a joke, is to make fun. And so she was sort of poking fun at what I was saying. And I snapped and I just said, I really hate it when you make a joke in the middle of me trying to tell a story that's important to me. And she said, okay, that was mean. And I said, okay, well, I'm just trying to tell you my truth.
And she said that was mean.
The way that I did it, I was like, I fucking hate it when you do that. Like I had stored it up for so long that I blurted at her. And she said, I can totally receive that from you, but I just need it in a different way. And I was like, okay, noted, heard. Hmm. And I think we came up with a word for when I say things that are too harsh, because that's the problem with me sometimes, is I deliver my truth a little too hard or my anger a little too hard. And so now if I do that to her, she says rutabaga and vice versa.
That's great to have a safe word. I like that.
So good.
It's okay to get angry. There's nothing wrong with getting angry, but you know, I get angry all the time. Less angry than I used to, though, because I surround myself with different people, because I try to confront things when they're happening. I have a friend out here who's late all the time. I just texted her and said, I just need you to understand that I find it so disrespectful when people are late, just putting it out there.
Like, great. And then how was that received?
Stop hanging out with you. She just wrote back, noted.
Good. I love that.
It's important to talk to people and tell people things and tell friends things. And, you know, this girl that I follow on TikTok was posting about how she went on a date and the guy, you know, didn't put his wallet out and she put her wallet out. And it was this whole like back and forth in her head about who should pay. And I said, what you should do is discuss at the table. Like, should I pay? Should you pay? Do you want to split it? Like, discuss these things openly.
Talk about it. Yes.
And figure it out. Like, everyone's afraid to say how they feel. You could solve so many problems.
You could. And I wonder if this is one of the key differences. Again, if we're talking kind of positive Americans, pros and cons, America, UK.
I mean, you're much better at this than we are.
So much better. I mean,
you must have noticed.
Oh,
yes. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Brits are really struggle with this.
We do a dance.
Yeah.
We do a, you know, like.
And then seethe behind backs.
Yeah. And also, don't you remember, Jen, that boyfriend that I had who called me aggressive because of how I used to speak?
It's like when people say that to me all the time and I'm like, no, you're mean. I'm like, I'm not mean. I'm honest, but I'm not going to change the words. I'm not going to change the fact that what you just said really hurt me.
But I think the Brits need a dance, unfortunately, a lot of
the time. It's so pathetic. It's like we think feelings or other people's feelings can literally kind of make us snap or something. I mean, it really is really pathetic. We're scared of feelings.
Yeah, that's why I love Brits.
Because we're so scared. Yeah. Heidi, when has anger driven you to do something incredible?
Incredibly good or incredibly
bad? Anything.
Either.
Both.
I think becoming a writer, a scripted writer. I was so angry. I wrote all the time. I wrote scripts all the time and couldn't get anybody to pay attention to me. And then when my friend hired me to work on his show, Baby Daddy, I was very meek in the writer's room because I didn't know what I was doing. And it was my first time. And the guy who was in charge of the writer's room was terrible. And he did a terrible job. And I would go into my boss's office every day and just be like, I can do this. I can do a better job. I know you don't know that I can do it, but I am telling you, like, I was so angry and so mad that I was just not being looked at and not being taken seriously. And as a woman, not by my boss, who's my friend, whose property I now live on, but that job made me so angry that I fucking crushed it. And I became the woman who ran the writer's room. And I became an executive producer on the show. And I wrote 25 of the 100 episodes of that television show that I'm very proud of. And I had no experience.
That's incredible.
So I would say that was good.
That's an amazing story.
Heidi, can we invite you into our virtual rage room?
Do you know what? I have a suspicion that Heidi would be brilliant with a baseball bat.
I literally posted yesterday about the men that I dated that still make me angry, that made me feel less, and how I wanted to punch them all in the face still to this day, 63 years later.
Well, maybe we'll give you a kind of extra. You can have an extra. Yeah,
exactly.
Go.
I need a rage room.
So what's the current news item that's making you seethe?
As much as I don't really enjoy her, the way people are treating Taylor Swift.
Yes.
Just leave her alone. The woman is making millions of dollars for people, employing hundreds of thousands of people. Has literally raised awareness about football for women, which, God forbid. You know, I had a friend, a male friend, write me and say he was so aggravated that they were cutting to her constantly. And I said, they've cut to her for 100 seconds out of 36 hours. Calm the fuck down.
So what is it? Why do people find her
problematic? They just hate women, man. They fucking hate confident women. This country hates
rich confident women as well.
Even America, because I wondered if in America they didn't do the kind of pulling down thing.
They just fucking hate us. I mean, this country is still very white, very male. And as soon as all the boomers die, my age, you know, I think it'll be a better place. But it is, you know, I just went to see this incredible movie yesterday by Jennifer Esposito called Fresh Kills, about the 80s growing up in Staten Island in the mob. And it was about the one daughter who didn't see her life being a wife. Or a mother. And she was like, what are my other choices? Can I have some other choices? And it's just such a wonderful movie about like what it's like to grow up knowing that you want to be more than what you're told you can be, because it really is baked into us.
I agree with you. It's there for everybody. Yeah.
Yeah. Every country, everywhere I don't know when it started or why it started. I'd like to have a conversation with God about what the fuck he did that made us come second, but it's exhausting. You know, things like that, when I just see women being taken down for just living their lives, it's so odd to me. That's the stuff that will always make me angry. You know, just hearing young girls talk about how they feel like their lives are over because they didn't get married or have kids. Like, it's okay.
Okay. Second baseball bat invitation. Aspect of modern life making you fume.
Just everything in America. I mean, the politics is just fucking horrifying. Like the fact that we might have Donald Trump in for a second office is so frightening to me. The anti-Semitism in this country is frightening to me. Like, guess what? I'm Jewish. I don't have anything to do with what Netanyahu is doing. I'm just a Jewish person that lives here, you know, and I feel horrible that women were raped to death, and horrible that 1.9 million people in Gaza are at a border, like terrified for their lives. Like, I have nothing to do with that. The politics in this country are so terrifying right now that I just don't know what's next. I really don't. And we're missing all the important issues like global fucking warming.
Right. Okay, number three.
Behaviour of others, which gets on your wick, as we say in Britain. Do you know what gets on your wick means?
Yes.
Yes.
Just, you know, again, like that lunch that I went to, just people telling you that your truth is incorrect.
Oh, yeah.
Perfect.
You know, someone asks you a question and you tell them the answer and they go, well, that's ridiculous.
And it's wrong. Yeah.
Right.
Don't ask the question.
Don't ask.
Yeah. Yeah. What's like, the point of conversation in that case? Also, very quickly, just to say, what I love about conversation and you giving me an answer that I don't like or agree with, well, that's a great like beginning to a really interesting half an hour chat about stuff. It's interesting, yeah. Right?
We don't talk to each other.
It's true. There's no meeting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No. Lastly, current slang or meme making you rage?
I recently did a post about this and it still angers me. And it is all of the expressions for women losing their virginity and how awful they are being deflowered, losing your womanhood. Yeah, the cherry one.
Maidenhead.
Anything that has to do with a woman's sexuality being the most important part of her being makes me fucking mental. Like the new Sex and the City show. It makes me crazy. Why am I not worth more than my fucking vagina? I haven't used mine in decades, so obviously it's not my most important part. And it makes me nuts. The whole, like, it's why I chose to write for women over 50, because, you know, you go into menopause at 50 and everyone decides you're done, you're washed up,
invisible.
You are no longer useful. Like, why is my sexuality the only thing that matters in this fucking country? I don't know if it's the same way in England.
Oh, it's totally, because I mean, think of all the men. The men step onto stage at that point. The silver foxes, the CEOs, they're loving it. We have to exit.
I mean, I literally said everything I write and everything I do now is to change the way the world looks at women over 50. And I hope I'm doing that a little bit because
you
it
are.
Is the thing that infuriates me the most. At
you
the
are
end of the day.
Changing our world, Heidi.
Yeah, you're a proper warrior.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, a warrior with a great big baseball bat. I want you on my side, basically. Yeah.
Thank you. I want to hang out with both of you. Like,
Come back to England.
It's always been a dream of mine to live in England, to live in London for at least a year.
Why so don't you
make that happen?
I always say my husband lives there, but he probably died in a war.
I thought it was so... What's the word? Scintillating?
Oh, good word.
Maybe. What Heidi was at, well, her whole kind of shtick, really, of where she's at now in terms of insisting on telling the truth, having real conversations, not putting up with bullshit anymore, not putting up with inauthenticity, but how that doesn't necessarily go down well when a woman delivers.
I mean... I think the truth-telling serum overall is a great thing. It might allow for choppier waters sometimes in your life, but my God, it attracts the right people to you ultimately.
Well,
and I think it puts you into the right rooms ultimately.
I agree, because it's offense, isn't it? People take offense, they feel hurt. But if what you've given them is the truth, then it's up to them in terms of how they handle it and what they do with it.
Yeah, Jenny, I don't like how you said that to me. That was too much, but you're right about this. And then we work out like
she was saying,
Heidi was saying, you know, the safe word kind of idea.
And then
it's up to me to go, I'm not okay, but that is really weird how you told me that.
But if then I get hurt by the fact that you said that it was weird how I told you, then I go and sort that out for myself.
Yeah. Truth serum all the way.
Oh, there we go. Let's give ourselves a good dose. Thank you for listening and sharing in our anger.
And remember, you're not mad to feel mad.
Please like and subscribe. It helps other people find the podcast.
Hi, my name is Kay Adams, and to be honest, I'm not so good with the aging process, so I enlisted my old chum, the filter-free Cara McKenzie, to advise.
Could you imagine being a porn star? The room would need to be really hot for me to strip off.
To be honest, she's not much help, but she is rather amusing. And along with some great guests, Joe Brand, Andy Oliver, Anton Dubek, Ruth Langsford, and Craig Revel Horwood, darling, we are learning how to be 60. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.